Hi everyone, Sane Man here. Recently I had a chat with someone named Lily, and she had a number of segments that she recorded with me, and she kept thinking her point of view was right, and then I kept changing her mind. This is the first segment. Sorry about the audio quality for the rest of this, but the content more than makes up for it. I got a new computer and it recognizes my old USB mic, but for some reason it won't let me record with it. I have newer mics, so now I'm using one of those for live streams. I just find it crazy that the H4n Zoom recorder doesn't work on Windows 10, but the H6n works on it no problem. Before I share the clip, let me first tell everyone about today's sponsor, the MGTOW Book Collection Part 2. Whether you're getting camel toe in Cambodia, banging babes in burkas in Turkey, or taking Polaroids of ladyboys in Thailand, Luca Vendetti has a series of books to make you live the dream. His new three-booklet series includes How to Live on $500 a Month in Cambodia, Turkey, and Vietnam, in addition to his classic, How to Retire on $200K in Southeast Asia. He also has the MGTOW book. Visit MGTOWBooks.com and use the promo code SANDMAN to get 10% off. Now available in four formats, PDF, MOBI for Kindle, EPUB, and text-to-speech MP3. Sponsor link is down below. Anyways, here's the first clip of my discussion with Lily, so enjoy!
I heard this from Karen Strawn. I'm paraphrasing because that was a long time ago. It's about men wanting to get rid of each other. She was explaining why male feminists exist. And she was basically saying that, I'm paraphrasing, it comes from the men's desire to get rid of the competition. That's why they take the side of women, to get rid of the rest of the men. But I actually don't necessarily agree with that, because what I see, I do see men coming together and being like brothers, you know, like the manosphere and these sort of things. So I don't think necessarily men want to instinctively get rid of each other. What do you think?
Yeah, men definitely want to get rid of each other. I mean, if as a like a man growing up as a child, bullies would usually pick on the weakest kids, because the weakest kids, they're not necessarily competition, but they keep all the other men in line. So like, if the bully asserts dominance over the weakest kid, which takes the least amount of work on their part, then all the other males will fall in line, and they will have, you know, they'll have basically, you know, control of the group of men. So it's not so much about getting rid of men. It's just about putting them in their place, so that the alpha can kind of do whatever he wants. And the alpha is usually the kid that matures the fastest when he's like, you know, 13, 14, 12, 13, 14. He gets the biggest, and then because he's the biggest, you know, he can assert physical dominance over everybody else. It doesn't have necessarily anything to do with intelligence. It's just, you know, physical dominance.
So is it in every man, or is it just some men?
Well, like I said, some men will mature faster than others. And like, if you're a 13-year-old boy and you become, you know, you get up to like, you know, 5'10", 6 feet tall, you know, 14, you're huge. Like, it's tempting to use that force to basically put all the other kids who are like 5'4", 5'3", whatever, under your control, right? Because they're all scared of you because you're bigger. So, you know, they'll hit each other in the locker room, or they'll basically try to, you know, assert that physical dominance.
Okay, so can we assume that, okay, this is actually a part of male nature wanting to assert dominance?
You know, so for example, you know, it's about asserting dominance over the weaker men, so that the weaker men do your bidding. So, you know, like, just like female nature is about, you know, subverting male effort and resources, you know, male nature is also about doing that from the men that are the biggest, strongest, richest, whatever. It's the same thing.
Okay, is there anything about this part of male nature that would make them vulnerable to manipulation?
Men in general, you mean? That's kind of a broad question, like, in terms of vulnerable to, like, can you be a little bit more specific?
I don't know. That's why I asked you. I'm wondering if if this part of male nature can be used by a woman for manipulating that man.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's if the woman can sense that the guy was, you know, he wasn't the alpha when he was younger, but now all of a sudden he's gotten older and he's now got money and he's been working out and he's a catch, but in his mind he's still that weak child that he was, you know, 10, 20 years ago. So, and she will sense that and she'll be like, oh, okay, so he's this weak, vulnerable, easy to manipulate and control guy because guys have controlled him his whole life. But like he has all of the alpha physical qualities and mental qualities, but he doesn't have that experience. You know, he didn't grow up that way. So his self-esteem is probably lower than somebody who's always been confident. I mean, I'm kind of guilty of that in a lot of ways. Like, even though I have a lot of things to feel self-esteem for, I'm still very humble and I still don't really, there's no ego because I, you know, for most of my life, I was really badly picked on. So I didn't really think too highly of myself. So as I've gotten older, you know, I could do things that, you know, would be considered great and wonderful and like people would look up to. But for me, it wouldn't really be that way because I've always felt like there's a part of me that says you're just not good enough. So in a way, it's a bad thing because it's a lack of self-esteem. But in another way, it's good because there's always this insatiable drive to get validation from, you know, from men, from women, from society in general, and it'll never be quenched. So that makes me extremely productive. So no matter what I could accomplish, I still wouldn't feel like it would be enough, even though everyone would be looking at it like, oh my God, like this is above and beyond the call of duty. And then for me, it's like, nah, it's just a Tuesday, right? Like and then women can exploit that, right? They can see, oh, he has all this value, but he doesn't recognize his value.
Yeah, he doesn't know how great he is.
Right, so.
Actually, Robert Greene talks about that as well. I don't exactly remember what he said, but he says it's a good thing because it will drive to be better.
Well, it's better, but you'll never be good enough, right? So even if you accomplish, like I said, amazing things, you still won't feel satisfied. So, it's a good thing because you'll never actually, you know, run out of things to do and ideas, and you're constantly trying to prove to the world that you're good enough, even though deep down inside you don't think you ever will be.
So about this part of male nature, so that means men need to be careful about other men as well.
Oh, absolutely.
How do you protect yourself from being backstabbed?
Well, you just assume that you're going to get backstabbed. At least that's pretty much been my experience my entire life. So the way I protected myself is just to distance myself emotionally from, you know, male friendships and make sure that like if the man turns on you at any moment and doesn't want to be your friend, well, you're kind of like, all right, I accept that. And you just walk away. So, you know, growing up, I've had a lot of friends that betrayed me. And I expect betrayal. Betrayal is kind of like a default mode. So when people betray me, whether it be male or female, I don't take it as a shock anymore. I used to be shocked and emotionally affected by it. But now I'm kind of like, meh, it happens. It's happened before. You know, give you an
example. Too many times.
Yeah, but it's not just, you know, men or women doing it. Now it's like corporations doing it too, right? So if, you know, a company you're working for just decides to lay you off and walk you out the door for no reason, like you just have to accept that. For a lot of people, it's a shock because they've never been treated that way. So when as myself, when you grew up and you were treated probably one of the poorest ways imaginable in terms of being a male, and then you grow up and then you deal with relationships, and you know, I wouldn't say I was treated the poorest way with women, but like a lot of those things that I saw women doing carried over from what men were doing as well, just in a more subtle and sneaky way. So it was kind of like they wanted the same outcome that the men wanted, but they just did it in a more like nice way. They used a white glove instead of a fist. So, and then corporations are like, well, we're going to give you some money. And then all of a sudden they're just going to decide when they cut the money off. And you're just supposed to be like, okay, I guess I'm not good enough for you anymore. Right. So it's just another sense of betrayal. So this is why I think the black pill and, you know, like a lot of the black pillars out there are rising, because society in general is so like people are becoming worse and worse and more deceptive and trying to get the edge on each other. And the trust horizon in our society is kind of declining. So, you know, people can't relax anymore around each other because they're always worried about what that person's going to like. Are they going to backstab them? Like what's going to happen?
Yeah, it's like a trend, isn't it? It's almost considered a positive thing to be sneaky.
Yeah, but it's not though. Like, you know,
it's not because societies, you know, do better if they can trust each other. You know, but
like I said, it's the trust horizons. The you know, people used to be able to trust people more in the past. You know, that's why I like talking with. You know, back when I was younger, you know, 20 years ago, I would talk, you know, I'd have jobs where I'd be around interacting with senior citizens, and they would be a lot more relaxed, and they would be a lot more like you didn't sense that there was any kind of deception or they were trying to get the edge on the conversation or, you know, like all these things that you kind of notice today. And, you know, with people that are older than me, I'm just like, why are they acting like this? Like, and I think it's just a generational shift. I think the people that I'm speaking of, those seniors, they grew up in, you know, the 1930s and the 40s. Life was tough, right? Like they went through a depression, they went through a world war. Their confidence kept getting beaten out of them, right? Because, you know, the wars were literally killing their friends and they were poor and they had all these bad things in life. So their confidence level was low. So when they got into, you know, to their 30s and 40s and they became adults, life was great. 1950s, 1960s, like it was like a utopia compared to where they came from. So they were really grateful for that. And so they weren't assholes towards each other because they remembered what bad times were like. And I think that part of these trends and part of this behavior that we're seeing now in terms of, you know, people treating each other worse and worse has to do with the fact that people haven't really faced any real hardships,
yeah,
at least for a generation or two.
Yeah, that's true. Hardship kind of brings people together. You need each other more.
Well, I don't think it necessarily brings people together. I just think it changes your outlook on life. Like, you know, when you come from hardship and then you get a little bit of good things in your life, you're grateful for it because you're like, I've never had this before. This is wonderful. And so you're going to say to yourself, like, do I need, you know, 10 cars and 5 houses? No, I've got one house and one car and I'm happy because, you know, for the longest time I've been poor and I've suffered. And this is enough, you know, and that's it, right? Like you feel grateful for what you have. But now, you know, when people grow up and they have everything given to them when they grow up, they need more and more and more and more to feel satisfied.
Yeah.
And they never will. That's the problem, right? They'll never have satisfaction because they've always had too much.
Yeah, it's like this thirst that never ends, isn't it? If you have a hard time, it's like if you're really, really hungry, apple tastes good. But if you're not, you're not going to eat it.
Well, look, if you've had every kind of food imaginable,
yeah,
and, you know, apples were just kind of like your 20th favorite food. And then there was another person who all they were eating was like rice and cabbage. And then they were given an apple and they'd be like, oh, wow, this is an apple. It's got sugar. This is great. Right. And they're so happy to have this apple. And to you, it's just, oh, that's just the, you know, that's just some random food that's at the bottom of my list. So
do you think that way people can experience a lot more satisfaction and happiness?
Yeah, because they have to be deprived. You have to be deprived while you're growing up. Go ahead.
I kind of have this philosophy that occasionally, if you have an easy life, you have to deprive yourself of certain things. So when you have it again, it feels good. So you feel more satisfaction.
But it's an easy life is probably the worst thing that can happen to you. Because if you have an easy life, you're not challenged to grow and change. You know, when you face hardships, you have to adapt. And, you know, people say, oh, these, you know, millennials, they're so entitled, or the you know, they want the world to change to them instead of the other way around. It's because, you know, for them, they've had everything handed to them, a lot of them, right? So when they go through that experience, they have to, like, everything's been their way for their whole life. So now if things aren't their way, then all of a sudden they throw a tantrum. So, the millennial generation and the generation that comes after them, I think we're heading for a world of hardship again, financially and energy wise and all this kind of stuff. So it's going to force them to have to adapt again. You know, so if you deprive people of things, you know, people say, oh, you know, food has become too expensive. And I think to myself, okay, but people are obese. So they could eat less food. You know, we could reduce the amount of food we have in the economy by, I don't know, 20-30%, and people would still not starve, and they would be a healthy weight. You know, we're depriving people of something, yet we're having a better outcome. Right. So I think that our society needs that deprivation of money and food and all this kind of stuff, because it's going to force us to get more creative. It's going to force us to innovate. It's going to force us to do something different. Because right now I just see stagnation everywhere. I see cultural stagnation. I see, you know, financial stagnation. I see, you know, relationship stagnation. Like, nothing is really evolving. Everything's just kind of falling apart. So we need a kind of like a forest fire of finance and of food to kind of burn, you know, the weeds, so that the trees can kind of grow strong again.